Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, John falls for a prank while driving a bus and proposes a senior league NFL. Meanwhile, I come into work on my birthday and hurt myself by waking up in a dead sprint. Plus, a conversation about internal messaging and the pressures on parents to become their child's hero. Today's episode is not sponsored by Hangman. It's like Wheel of Fortune, but with 100% more death imagery if you lose. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com. To join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Special birthday edition of Talk About That. It's Johnny W.'s birthday, and the whole world rises up to celebrate with great aplomb.
I don't know if it means that I'm just extra dedicated to the podcast or if I'm just kind of a sad sack loser.
Well, I kept asking, like, do you want to
come in on my birthday to do the podcast? I don't know. It's fine. I like doing it. Well, what's better on your birthday than coming in and talking about yourself?
You know what? You're right.
That's my only birthday wish.
It's your gift to you.
Yeah. When I blow out the candles, that's what I'm wishing for. Hey, can I make this more about me? And then I close my eyes and I just hope against hope that it'll happen.
Like, what if I had a podcast that was just a stream of consciousness where I could say anything I wanted to about myself?
Well, not anything.
Well.
We do some editing around here.
We do a little bit of editing. Yeah.
We need to do that. That's what we need to give to the patrons is, like, the stuff we cut out so they could just wash their hands of us all together. They're like, oh, wow.
Send them the unedited version.
Yeah.
It's usually like a word.
That's true. It's just a word.
It's usually like a...
Yeah. By the way, if you want to support the show, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com where all the over 270 episodes are archived.
Gotcha. I've lost count now.
And you can click that link on the top right. And you get ad-free content there. And but yeah, so do that. That'd be great. We love our... We have a new review. Leave a review, by the way. That helps people find the show. John, you want to read that review? If you leave a review, we'll probably read it on the show if it's nice. Actually, if they're mean, that's even more fun, probably. No, don't do a mean review just to get read on the show. We won't do that. That encourages more trolling. We don't want more. We need less trolling in the world.
I could use a little less.
Yeah.
A little less trolling.
You didn't have it ready, and I apologize.
I didn't. And
I told you a minute ago that I was going to have you read that review.
I know. I'm clicking the link right now. But it's so amazing.
You're making me look foolish.
This is happening in real time. Memento Style is the title. It's a 5-star.
Do you know what that's referencing?
Memento, sorry.
Yeah, do you know what
it's referencing? The Fresh Maker.
No, John.
Oh, sorry.
Do you know what Memento is?
Memento Mori? Okay.
No, John.
I know what...
It's the Christopher Nolan movie about the guy who wakes up. He loses his memory every day. So he has these series of tattoos to remind him of things. And he has to decipher every day what he has forgotten and try to start his life over. It's kind of like the darker version of 50 First Dates. Well, but anyway, so it's like a mystery's unraveling, and so it's told out of order in a lot of ways, and it's told. So that's what they're saying is they listen to the podcast out of order.
Gotcha.
When they say Memento style.
Yeah, sorry, I've not seen that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great movie. You know, he did the Batman movies, which you probably did enjoy.
I've seen those.
You see the popcorn films, but you won't go see the ones that are critically beloved.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Anyway, you need to watch
it.
It's very good.
Yeah. He says, what a fantastic podcast. I recently discovered this one and have been listening to it all day at the office.
Yeah.
I wonder where he works. Anyway, it's such a great series to binge. I've been doing it Memento style, though. I've been listening in reverse. I think reverse order is the right way.
Yeah, probably.
I think you've chosen wisely here, sir.
You don't want to start at the beginning.
No, I wouldn't. I'd go backwards. I think we got better, John.
We've gotten better, and we've gotten a little more concise. And there's segments now. We have a couple of segments that we've added.
Yeah.
Things have gotten a little better.
And he says, and when the new episodes drop each week, then I listen to them. So mostly the episodes that I binge are in color, or as John Driver puts it, not so black and white. I like that.
Oh, he made a little
reference. He made a reference.
That's a little like pandering.
I think he just helped me get the book to one more person.
And if just one person would read that book, that's
still waiting on one person.
Just one person to finish it. Yeah.
And then the new episodes are the ones in black and white. Doing it this way gives the listener the feeling that they have short-term memory loss, just like Lenny. Only the people who have seen Christopher Nolan's Memento will understand. Keep up the good work.
He went on to explain.
Did, yeah. Yeah. Keep up the good work on this podcast, boys. You have me crying from laughing and also crying during the deep spiritual subjects as well. I can't wait to keep listening more and more so I can finally see how this podcast got started. See, he wants to know the origin story.
He wants to know our Batman Begins, Christopher Nolan.
Yeah. I look forward to any future book giveaways and the past ones, too. You know what? Kyle, this is Kyle McClure via Apple Podcast. Thank you for your review. If you'll just email me at john@johndriver.com, bro, I'll send you a couple books.
Look at that.
Yeah. Thank you so much
this
for your
review. This is what happens when we give and we give and you people just take. Here's the thing. I've been working with like social media now this year more than ever before, and so you may have seen some of my clips out there, dear listeners.
It sounded like such a like boomer thing to say. I've been working with social media.
Well, it's like I don't love it, and so it's been hard for me to like give into it, but this past year I've really invested more time in it, and it's paid off. It's been good as far as like my interaction with the fan. But I had people tell me that are big social media people, they're like, well, you don't want to respond. You need to respond just enough to where they feel special that you responded to them. But if you respond to every comment, then it's not special. You want to be different. You want to look, like you're different. I go, I don't like those rules. So if somebody leaves me a comment now, sometimes I'll just go in, or if they message me, I'll respond. And so, but then sometimes it goes sideways. You didn't mean for it to. And I don't want to like call this person out because they're a listener to the show. But I thought it was such a funny interaction. This was the interaction I had yesterday. This person messaged me. Her name is Angie. I won't say her last name. She said, I just heard the podcast with the manual transmission joke, and it literally made me cackle. I love it. If you don't know that joke. You remember that joke, John?
Did you tell this on the podcast?
I was trying to remember. I don't know. But one of my one-liners is, if you yearly transcribe, what is it? If you yearly transcribe and give out a book about five-speed car repair, that's annual manual transmission of a manual transmission manual. It's like a really like layered, that's a layered joke.
I've not heard that.
Yeah. Annual manual transmission of a manual transmission manual. So anyway, evidently I said that on the podcast.
That's well done.
And she goes, and I love the podcast. Exclamation points all around. Heart. She put a heart. Thanks to all of you for keeping me smiling. Smiley face. So I saw that and I was like, you know what? All right, Angie, I see you. Hey, thanks for the kind words, Angie. I messaged back to her. 5 minutes go by. She responds, you know, I love that you guys are so real, but now I'm mildly weirded out that you answered me. Life is so strange.
So she was weirded out.
She was weirded out that I responded.
See, and that's an interesting...
That's not what I was going for.
Right, you were going for like, hey...
I was going for like, hey, I'm a man of the people. Thanks for listening, yeah. Angie. Maybe she thought it wasn't me, or maybe she's like, I thought you were a big star, and now I've lowered myself in her eyes. Angie, I don't like this attitude.
Angie, you now know this was really Johnny. He just wanted to be nice.
I don't have anything. I'm here on my birthday to shoot a podcast.
Ugh. He's got nothing else to do,
yeah,
guys.
Angie, all I do is sit around and wait for another comment from you. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks for listening, Angie. And,
yeah, it was really nice.
Sorry if I weirded you out, but thanks for listening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, that's why I try to be standoffish to people for that very reason right
you
there.
You can't. You listen. It's like sometimes there's rock star behavior that irks me. Sometimes you think somebody's being a rock star, though, and they're not. For instance, here's a big one for me. Bono wears sunglasses indoors.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And for years, I thought, this guy, and I love Bono. U2 is one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
But I see why people don't like Bono, and a lot of times it's like, this guy with right. the sunglasses indoors. So aloof.
Right.
It's like chewing gum. You know, you just look like, yeah, I'm buying this. You know, you just look different when you're chewing gum if you're in a conversation. And so come to find out years ago, I read an article and he has like macular degeneration. He has eye problems. So the bright lights hurt his eyes. And wow. he's got bright lights in his eyes all the time because he does press conferences. He does these things and the bright lights hurt his eyes. He has literally like very sensitive eyes. So he only wears that is to protect his eyes. He's not trying to be aloof.
This is our official apology to Bono for Jones.
Bono, he's been through so much. That guy can't catch a break.
Let me tell you.
But I just think like there's certain things that are perceived as being a rock star thing, but you don't know. It might have a utilitarian function.
Oh.
But I'm trying to go beyond that and just be like a man of the people. And even then, I'm stopped at every turn.
Ugh. To be clear, too, I'm not ever aloof on purpose, usually.
Yeah.
To people.
You're accidentally aloof.
I sent a text today to someone. They texted me, I think, last week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. And I responded to it. I almost always respond.
Yeah.
And if I don't, it's legitimate forgetfulness.
Yeah.
It's not like you. I'm not thinking it out so right. much. Like, I'm actually living my life.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Not just like, hey, how does this work in interactions with people out there on the internet?
What do the humans do when they get a message on Facebook? What are carbon-based life forms doing these days? That's what I say to myself when yeah. I get a, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, all that said, it's hard because you don't know what the right thing to do is. I want to get in there and be like, and mix it up. But I know if you get a negative comment, it's never a good idea to get in there and defend yourself.
No.
Usually. Sometimes you just have to clear up clarify miscommunication.
Yeah.
That's okay. But if it's just like a, you suck, you're not funny, there's no way you can ever win.
No.
That person's made up their mind about you. Move on.
Yeah.
And so you're just wasting life force.
And again, when I said that, it wasn't yeah. like directly about you.
Yeah.
It was on your page, but mm-hmm. it was more about like
right.
the kind of the way that you are. Not
yeah. It's like John Shriver. I was like, well, that looks like that's the same profile pic. You didn't even change that.
I'm not real good on social media, you know that, so.
Did you see the photo I sent you yesterday? Because somebody started following me on Facebook and yeah. his name was Johnny Canada.
Which is my father.
And he's like a middle-aged guy from somewhere in the South. And he wears a little golf shirt and slacks and he's with his wife. And I was like, he looks not unlike Johnny Canada, your father-in-law. I was like, this is like bizarro. It's like yeah. the sliding doors of Johnny Canada's.
Have you ever seen the two Johnny Canada's in the same room at the same time?
Johnny Canada sounds like a superhero name.
Yeah,
it's really like does. The Canadian superhero.
Yeah.
You know? He's their Superman. Somebody's up there trying to steal all the maple syrup. He's like, to the rescue!
Hold this poutine while I rescue the world.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're thinking, we're trying to
he's very polite. You know, he's a very polite superhero.
Put down that bus.
Yeah, or I shall, yeah.
Please.
Please.
He says please. Hey, you know what, Johnny?
Yeah.
I think we want to say please mm-hmm. as we ask our listeners just to take a moment and hear from a few of our sponsors. Yeah.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
Hey, by the way, it's yeah. your birthday.
Right.
I don't know if you heard about it.
I did, and you bought me lunch today.
I did. But that's not all I bought you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You got me a thing?
I got you a thing.
No.
So it's not a big thing.
Oh.
But, you know, I'm going to be honest about this. I'm not the best gift giver, as you know.
You're coming in hot with these qualifying statements on this gift.
And my wife knows.
Yeah.
Like, I just, it's like a menu for me. But I spent several days...
Really?
And
put thought into it.
A lot of time searching.
Well, now I have to pretend to like it.
Well, it's not impressive at all. In the end, I went with something very simple because, like, it's like if I would have bought you things that I thought were cool, they were actually my things.
Oh, I see.
And then I bought something that I thought you would have to say, oh, thanks. I almost bought something.
Yeah, because we're on the air. Like, I have to feign.
But even as a friend, you'd have been like, yeah, but it would have been just kind of a waste of your time, you know, kind of thing.
So I'm probably going to make fun of it.
In the end.
No matter what.
It's really simple. I'm tossing it to you. Oh.
John.
You can't. And now he's got to get up and get it. It got caught in the air. Johnny is picking it up. So what I thought instead is.
Yeah.
Me and you go to Topgolf.
Hold on. This is a Topgolf gift card, and it says on the top, $25 to $500.
When you get there, just tell them how much.
You didn't. It's like what I do is I cross that out and put in whatever I got it for, but you just left it open like, let's just see.
Let's just see what happens. It's either $25. No, it's $50.
Okay, well, that's enough for what, 10 minutes of Topgolf?
Oh, come on. Is that all?
No, it's enough for more. You can get up
an
hour
play
for
a
that,
couple
probably.
Rounds, probably.
Yeah.
And then...
Are you going to go with?
That's the idea.
Okay.
We've been talking about Topgolf a lot lately.
We have.
And we haven't gone.
We've not played golf in a while.
I want to play real golf, too.
Yeah.
So if you want to bypass
Well, we need Topgolf to get there, get our swing back.
I do. You know what? I got to get that swing back.
Phew, I tell you what.
That's how John found his swing. Well, anyway, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I really did put a lot of, like, I was looking on.
John, this is a gift card. You put zero thought into this.
You understand. That was how I wanted you to know. I agonized for days. I really did. And probably spent a good hour and a half internet scrolling, looking.
Yeah. You're good with words, but I think you need to think about what agonized really means.
No, it was like, it really was. It was
you
like, I
tortured
wanna do
yourself.
Something nice.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, it's
and I can't, it's like a menu. I can't decide.
You know
decide.
What? I'm one of those guys that I love a gift card.
Well, I knew what you would like because I almost bought you just a regular gift card.
Oh, it's just like a.
Like a Visa.
It's like it's giving me cash?
Yeah, basically.
What are you doing?
But then I was like, but Johnny does like experiences and we like to hang out.
Yeah.
So I thought, and he liked golf. So
and you thought maybe he'll take me with him. So really.
That was the idea.
It kind of is a gift for you.
He is taking me with him because I'm taking you to Topgolf. That's the gift. So here's the gift card.
That's very nice.
I've already prepaid part of it.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll pay for the rest of it when we get there. If that's
oh, well, that's good. And can we get those? They have those donut holes there, John.
Ooh.
You seen this? So they have a dessert there that's a basket of donut holes. And then it comes with this syringe, like turkey baster of syrup that you can inject. Different injectables that you inject into the donut holes.
Wow.
Like custard or Bavarian cream or just like jelly.
Wow.
And they're laid off to the side like you feel like a doctor.
Yeah.
You feel like you're performing a procedure on your desserts.
When
it's a way to get fatter while you play golf.
Right. Well, you act like you're doing
You figured
sport.
Out a way to.
Golf already is one of the sports.
Yeah.
That you can be.
Yeah.
Now, those guys are. In great shape that play.
Well, the pro golfers are.
Right. But John Daly was not a small
No, he
golfer.
Was the outlier. Yeah. He was the exception that proved the rule.
Like, you could just, as long as you got a good swing.
And he had that haircut, too. He had, like, the mullet with the bangs, the flat across the top. Looked like he'd cut his hair with a 5-iron. Like, it just was, it was a little jagged. It wasn't great. John Daly, though.
Not a sponsor.
He could play.
Yeah, he's still alive, right? We're speaking of him.
We're speaking ill of the living.
He's probably still the senior.
That's
tour.
Our policy.
Could you imagine if NFL had the same thing that pro golf had? Like they had a senior league. Like golf.
That would
does
be
something
so, well, to, no, because you're taking hits. Like you don't need to be taking a hit at 45.
It's the only
though.
Sport that I can think of where it's
right.
like you know what?
Bowling.
You made millions of dollars doing this as a younger man.
Yeah.
Why don't you just keep on making millions until you die?
Yeah.
Just play until your 70s and 80s. Like, what a great sport.
Right. You're right. You can't. Maybe curling.
Maybe. You might. But
you can't squat down. You can't get back up.
I'm saying
from
have
that.
The senior NFL game and just let it be what it is.
Ooh.
What if it, like, developed its own following and you know you go to a game.
You'd watch it.
And you know
still, I guarantee people would still watch Barry Sanders run.
You know, like the whole field's lined with ambulances just waiting
Absolutely.
For the injuries. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Walled all around the outskirts is just nothing but ambulances.
It's like he breaks free.
Gurneys. His hip breaks free.
I was going to wait about 35 seconds for him. He's still running.
He's still, yeah.
The 10. The 9. I think we just started something.
Oh, man.
So it's not XFL.
Yeah.
It's what? This is
it is XFL, but it's EX. the XFL.
Yes.
Oh, see what we did? We just made a whole new branding.
Trademark.
Yeah, nobody can take that from us now.
That's, I'm glad that intellectual it's in the property. Privacy of this.
Yeah, no one will ever know that we came up with that.
Yeah.
I hope it happens. I want to see it happen. I don't know. Well, yeah, man, it's but that's what I tell you my story about hurting myself. You know, I'm in my late 40s now.
So you were playing in the XFL.
So I'm playing against Barry Sanders. No. I don't have night terrors as bad anymore, but even when I have them, I can talk myself. I have sleep paralysis now with the melatonin. So I lay there. I don't get up anymore and interact.
You just stay a prisoner.
But even when I would get up and turn on the lights because I would think there's bugs in the room, or I would see like a mouse stand up on his haunches at my alarm clock. Like I really would see stuff. And I would stand up and be like, oh my God. And then Curry would be like, it's not. And I would turn on the light and I would look around for a minute and then like, I know I'm okay.
Right.
And then Curry would be like, you're an idiot. And I go back to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, marriage.
Right.
But I've never just, I haven't sleptwalked since I was a teenager.
I'm really impressed with how you past tensed sleepwalk.
I haven't sleptwalked. Sleepwalked?
I don't know.
Is it sleptwalked or sleepwalked? Anyway, I haven't done that since I was a teenager, where I literally used to get up and like go stand in the corner and pee in trash cans. One time I went out in my underwear and got ready to go to school. Like I got in the back seat of the car in my underwear. And my mom kind of knew that I was up. And so she was like, back then you believed don't wake a sleepwalker. That was like the myth. So she just kind of let me.
Because turn on you.
I don't know what they thought would happen. So she like let me just like.
He'll be stuck that way.
That's right. His face will get stuck that way. He'll never put on clothes. So I'm in the car and I'm, you know, 14 or whatever. And then I guess she just waited and took me back to bed. She led me back to. And I remember it happening, but I just thought it was a dream. So all that said, I don't really interact with these night terrors. But the other day, and I can only attribute it to this, I watched on the plane Parks and Rec season 3 on my trip to beautiful New Mexico. And I'm watching the episode about where they're doing the Harvest Festival. Do you know Parks and Rec?
Oh, yeah, I watched
it. So this was the first Lil Sebastian.
Yeah.
Where they're all freaking out about Lil Sebastian.
Genuine.
And this is before they do the whole thing, but yeah, he gets out of the corral.
Yeah.
And then Tom blames Jerry, even though it's Tom's fault. He left the gate open.
Yeah.
And then, because everybody blames Jerry for everything. So I don't know if that was in my head. That was the only thing I could think of. So I'm dreaming the other night that some animal, it wasn't Lil Sebastian in my dream, but it was maybe one of my dogs. A gate opens and they're gone. And I take off running after them full blast. Well, evidently, I was running full blast in real life.
No way.
I jumped out of my bed and I picked up knees and everything and ran full blast into the wall of my bedroom.
Johnny.
And I don't know if I came down on my, I think I hit, and I hit my head too. I hit my nose and my head. I mean, I'm lucky I didn't break my nose, because I mean, I ran full into a flat wall.
Wow.
And then I think I drove myself down to my knees because I just was whatever, and I'm still asleep. And so Curry just hears the thud, and I wake up, and I'm in pain. And then I got up, and I kind of limped to the bathroom to kind of check myself out and take a Tylenol. Jeez. Then I go back to bed. Well, that was 3 days ago. Now, my knees. I showed you my knees.
Oh, yeah.
My knees look rough.
Yeah.
So I full-on picked up my knees and drove them into sheetrock.
Wow.
Basically. I'm lucky I didn't, like, put a hole in the wall.
Wow.
So, anyway, R.I.P. Lil Sebastian, but I was chasing something. It kind of scares me, though, because, like, I've not interacted with a dream that way in a long time. Like, yeah. I don't want to.
What if that starts?
What if I get in the car? Like, what's.
What if you're on the road by yourself and Curry's not there to stop it?
Would I be. Yeah. What if she's.
What if, like, in your mind.
You're making this worse.
You're solving a mystery or, like, fighting crime. You're chasing a criminal.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh huh.
Like, we could write a show about it. It'd be like. Sleepwalker Texas Ranger. Huh?
No.
No.
No, John. No. No.
I pulled a Johnny.
You really did.
I waited through the whole thing.
You waited. You had it on deck and you were like, you done talking? I got you.
I acted like I was interested the whole time, just like you do.
That's great.
No, that's great. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Have you ever sleptwalked?
Yeah. I'm more likely to, again, see something. I haven't done it. I haven't done it a long time either.
But like some people cook and do crazy stuff. They eat. Like, and they say Ambien. That was one of the side effects of Ambien. Like a certain percentage of people will wake up and do crazy things.
Look, I had a family member on Ambien, and he woke up one morning.
Yeah.
And he walked into his kitchen, and there was a Walmart bag with like some DVD in it.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the DVD was? So he made a purchase?
He got up, drove to Walmart, bought some DVD.
No way.
Came home, went back to bed, no recollection of
it. This feels like somebody that is like has a guilty pleasure DVD they wanted to buy. They're like, now I own Happy Gilmore.
My wife.
You're like, you just like Happy Gilmore. Don't blame the Ambien.
No, it was something like B-movie off. Like it was not a masterpiece like Happy Gilmore.
That's great, though, that...
I mean, it's a little scary.
It is scary to think you drove. But everybody's had that moment where you're on a long car trip, and then you suddenly realize you don't remember the last 10 minutes of driving.
Right.
And you're very lucky to still be alive, because you have been interacting with other cars. But you're just in that.
Right.
It's like you're hypnotized by the street, the lines.
Yeah, the worst ever, because I used to drive a lot between, Laura was in Clarksville, and I was in Knoxville, and so I'd stay way too late, go to see her, go to dinner, hang out, and then leave at like midnight.
Yeah.
And I'm going to lose an hour of the time zone and for an 8 o'clock class the next morning. So that's the worst. Like it's 2:30, you know, and I used to like open my moonroof, and I think I've said this before, but I'd stick my hand up in the air and I'd cup the air and shoot it into my eye.
What?
Like I'd redirect the airflow because I couldn't, you know.
It's like one of those plane vents that has one stream of air.
Exactly. Like just shoot it and I'd crank the music up. I'd go hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold with the
That's like a funny visual if somebody's driving on the highway beside you. They just see you got your fist up. You look like the end of the Breakfast Club. You end at the end of Breakfast Club. Hey, 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 hey. Yeah, dude, you were Judd Nelson, bro, in the trench coat.
He's really enjoying his drive. No, he's just trying not to die. But my big thing is when your brain starts dreaming about the highway, it'll do that.
Right.
It's almost like one of those movies where someone's breaking into a house and they put something in front of the security camera that looks like what you're already looking at.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like your brain will do that. Here's the highway. Mm-hmm. What if you dreamed about this? See, everything's fine. So, yeah, it's scary stuff. But
I'm glad we're still here. But everybody's had that moment where you get home and you don't remember what you did.
Where you live. Wait.
Yeah. That's not my house.
That's...
Come on. We've all been there.
Haven't we, though?
Sheesh. I don't know, man. But it's weird, man. So now I have injuries from I don't think I've ever had an injury.
You need to start strapping yourself in.
I don't want to be that guy. I can't do that. My buddy Brent one time punched himself in the face.
Okay.
I think he said he was fighting with somebody in his dream, and he kind of uppercutted himself.
Wow.
So he had like a fat lip.
I feel like a therapist could have a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
Maybe he was fighting with himself, Johnny.
Aren't we all, though?
Come on now.
I think we are.
Hey, speaking of therapists, have you ever listened to Pete Scazzaro?
Mm-mm.
So Pete Scazzaro does the emotionally healthy leader stuff.
And okay.
I've been listening to his podcast. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, oddly enough, anymore. But, man, he's really, really good stuff. There's some really good stuff. If you know who Rich Velotis is.
Yeah.
I believe, if I'm correct, that Pete was his lead pastor at one point. Like he mentored him and mentors a lot of people. But he was talking today about he had a name for it. I don't remember the exact name for it, but how key it is to come to grips with. He said there's about 10 or 15 of them with like some internal message that you constantly play in the background that you're probably not aware that you do.
Yeah.
And he was using examples like there's someone that they, no matter what they do, they're always hearing I'm a loser.
Yeah.
And they can respond two different ways. They can go on to become a CEO.
Right.
Because they're a loser, so they have to outrun it. Or they can go on to become a drug addict and not do much in terms of achievement in their life. because what's the point? I'm a loser, or I'm abandoned. Sometimes it's, I think it's not even related necessarily to an experience.
Yeah.
Like sometimes there's
just
almost,
your wiring.
Yeah. There's almost a wiring of I'm not worthy of love. I'm unloved, you know? And he said, and he never used the term self-fulfilling prophecy, which I'm so glad because it's such a,
yeah,
an overused one. But he said, what you really will do in the term or the study of it, he said, is what you will do though, is you will return to what's familiar.
Yeah.
Your mind will subconsciously return to what's familiar. He said, so you will create scenarios where those things play out for you to be the loser.
Yeah.
Either to conquer it in front of other people, you know, to try to disprove it, but how you'll return to what's negative instinctively,
mm-hmm.
or you return to that message instinctively, and you will be making scenarios that you're not aware you're making. And that really was fascinating to me.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, I know we just passed Father's Day, and I think about those things sometimes about, like, because you're right, everybody assumes now, because we're into like pop psychology the last 40, 50 years, so we all are like novice therapists ourselves.
Right.
We know the lingo.
Yeah.
So we say things, we don't even know what they mean. Like, if you can't handle me at my worst.
Right.
We don't even know what we mean by these things. We just say things. And we say things like self-fulfilling prophecy, and they become almost meaningless. But I do think it's interesting that a lot of us believe that who we are or the negative things about us are all because of trauma. And I just don't believe that. I think they can inform, but everybody that has, you know, negative things or patterns, it's not always because, like you said, a message that was literally said to you. Your mom literally told you one day, you're worthless.
Right.
Some people just feel worthless, and they were raised by the same person who went on to become CEO. And, you know, this, in families you see that, where, look, I raised these kids the same.
Yeah.
One took the message and ran with it. One just, no matter what, no matter how many compliments I gave them, they couldn't be filled up by them.
Yeah.
So you see that in people. So it's hard, and that makes it hard on parents. I'm not a parent, but I can only imagine the pressure of, like, what is the right thing to do? What is the right message to be sending to my kids?
Well, I mean, first of all, when we reference CEO, we're not saying that that person ended up better off necessarily than someone
right.
who didn't, because there can be
right.
just as it's so easy to think, well, the person who became financially successful must,
right.
have,
sure, sure.
must have done well. But the truth is, they could be just in a bad spot. But I think that there's some comfort in what you just said, in recognizing that every message that my child and every message I've received is not necessarily from the same source. There may be messages there that I don't have anything to do with.
Yeah.
You know, the whole father-mother thing, but especially with dads, and Father's Day was a great example of this, you know, that your dad's your hero kind of thing. He needs to be the hero, not in just a sense of I elevate him. He needs to be the one who saves you from stuff.
Yeah.
And so there is a protective side to that, but like it is not, and a lot of dads just run from it. It's so much pressure. And I remember when Sadie, I don't know, I told her this story the other day, she was 7 or 8 maybe, and she was feeling, I don't know, anxious about something, low self-worth in the moment, and I was very distraught. I was praying about it.
Yeah.
I was just like, I mean, I have done nothing but, you know, care for this little girl since before she got here. Like, man, pray and speak good things. And I made a lot of mistakes as dad, not that, but it's been a lot of affirmation. Like on a daily basis, it's
yeah.
a whole lot more building up than it is, you know, tearing down, at least in our attempts. And I was just like, I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this low self-worth coming from? Because I think that the hidden message we've always heard is dads especially, you know, we're going to build up our children, and,
right.
and it's the father wound. So,
right.
So you can keep the father
wound. You're responsible
wound.
For it.
Yeah. Like, don't let there, as long as you avoid the father wound and build up. And I kind of heard this whisper in my heart, and it was almost like Jesus laughing a little bit. And I don't always hear God's voice all the time, but I kind of had this impression like,
yeah.
oh, you thought you could be a good enough dad to keep her from being broken. Oh, that's funny. Like, you thought you could stop her from being human.
Right.
Like, that's only I can
right.
deal with the actual brokenness of the human soul. Like, she came into a broken place. So you're not hopefully doing additional damage, and we're
right.
all doing damage. As
you're parents. Not the one breaking her necessarily, but she's going to get broken.
Right.
Because she's getting messaging from the world, too. It's just like people used to say that about church. Like, well, I get, you know, we used to say, you say that in youth group, I get your kids for an hour a week.
Yeah.
You know, and they're getting this onslaught of messages from everywhere else. So, you know, you guys have to take, you know, teachers say that. You got to take responsibility for your kids' education too, you know.
Yeah. Well, and the things that are not happening in classrooms or in youth rooms for churches are not only more replete or greater in quantity or volume, but they probably constitute more of what those kids especially take away as as real life.
Yeah.
I think that's another hard thing as a former youth pastor who's now a dad, is like trying to get my kid to understand. Now, she never says it like this, but I get this impression, not just from her, but a lot of kids her age, like that church life is different. Like, this is a moment. This is what we do. This is the religious moment. Mm-hmm. And over here is the real life moment.
Right.
And I think adults do that every day as well.
Yeah, they just don't call it that. They don't label it, but it's compartmentalized.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, no, this is like when it matters the most. And whether you stop pray or whether you screwed up and made the mistake and said a cuss word or did something bad to somebody, like all of those moments are so key. And God's not distant just because you weren't doing God things. Like, you being alive is a God thing. Life is a God thing. All, you know, so it's like bringing some of that, like, you want a sacred place, but you want people to recognize that even in the profane, there's nothing that can separate us from the sacred.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so when we just instinctively believe God is distant because we are doing distant things, or we're in a distant situation, a place of doubt, a place of cynicism, a place of cursing, a place of hurting someone else, like, God is equally present. I think we really miss that because we compartmentalize. Like, well, when I get done with this, I got to deal with God now.
Yeah.
Not like God was there with me, you know.
Yeah, I was doing an interview and I was talking about, it might have even been my phone interview for like, there was something I did. And it was basically, they were talking about laughter. And this wasn't a religious setting. But I started talking about laughter as like this thing that I think it reveals so much about a crowd. And I think it's why we love it so much. It's an affirming thing. It's like an agreement. Uh-huh. This huge agreement that happens between a group of disparate people.
Yeah.
We're all so different. And yet in the moment, we all agree that was funny. We all did it at the same time. And we're in the dark together. So we feel enveloped by this feeling. And I said, honestly, I think it's kind of a holy moment.
Yeah.
You know? And I think they were kind of set back on their heels a little bit when I said that. But I really believe that. I think that's one of the reasons laughter is so powerful and healing, is because it's like this huge agreement about something. We found common ground, or we found something, even if it's something dumb. Like, I have a friend who talks about, like, well, we can't all agree on politics, so politics is a terrible place to go with your comedy. But we can all agree we hate the Limu Emu. So write jokes about that.
Right.
And so that's kind of where you want to go. If you want to get a crowd laughing, find the thing that we all can agree on, or we all have experienced. But I think there's a holy moment there, even though, like you said, we're in this profane world. There's like these little glimpses. And I think laughter is one of those things. I think that's why I'm so drawn to it.
Yeah.
And to create it.
Yeah. And I think the things that unify, it sounds cliche. And being around your comedy world so long.
Yeah.
I think we roll our eyes at people who are, not people. We roll our eyes at the statements of, hey, come on and do this interview about, you know, how, you know, laughter does a heart good like medicine.
Right, right,
like,
right.
You know, there's like a real...
They find the one Bible verse that they can like lump to. So it's okay, everybody, to laugh. Like, we're trying to reassure people that it's okay. Because it's like, we shouldn't have to do that. It's such strange that people
feel super
like,
forced.
I got to find a scripture to make this okay that we're having a comedy in a church or whatever.
It's almost like you sanitize what was good about it out of it. Like, you dissected it a little too much and now the frog is dead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've even talked about that when I talk to people about, like, do you call yourself a Christian comedian? I was like, not really. I said, people market me that way and I'm fine with it. But I always harken back to, like, Derek Webb of Caveman's Call used to say, whenever you see the word Christian used as anything other than a noun, it's a marketing tool.
Yeah.
And I try to be careful of, like, people. I know what they mean. What they mean is, this is safe for your family. This is not going to be offensive.
Yeah.
But to a lot of people, that are just like, they just got through watching Jim Gaffigan's or Brian Regan special. They see Christian comedian. They're like, is this going to be, this guy got puppets? Has this guy,
right?
Is this going to be very safe and not take any chances and not push any, like, I don't think that that sends the message that of what my show is going to be. So I don't like, it's almost like a misrepresentation, but I see churches that are doing it and I understand why they do it. And I enjoy doing comedy in churches still. So I'm like, okay, I see why they're going, but I would never market myself that way. Cause again, I think it's, that's marketing. Yeah. I am a Christian, but it's like comedy to me, comedy should, I don't think it should offend, but it should challenge.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people don't want to be challenged. Even in a church setting, even when the in a sermon, they don't want to be challenged. They want to be affirmed. So definitely they don't want to be challenged by, okay, this guy don't align up with my beliefs. Let's just fold arms and not laugh. Like, we have audiences doing that now in comedy shows where they're just like, they're waiting for you to pick on their hated political candidate before they'll laugh, you know?
Yeah. Jamar Tisby, has written a lot about, he had someone at a Christian college or somewhere he was having it, or maybe as an interview, they were talking about evangelical Christians, and this person described evangelical Christians as people who don't ask questions.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like that for that person was that experience.
Yeah.
I think it comes back to that. I don't want to be challenged. I don't want to be faced. And, you know, I'm very decided.
Yeah.
Already, because there are fundamental truths about God that are, infallible.
Yeah.
Right? Unassailable. So therefore...
But I now need to have a made-up mind about everything.
Right. I can now take anything else that I can fit under that Christian umbrella.
Yeah.
And say also this.
Yeah.
You know, when the church fathers and mothers from the beginning, and certainly the prophets of old, there's always a wrestling. I mean, again, Israel means wrestling.
Right. And you lean into that, the mysteries of God, and... Part of that maybe our Google culture where we just want to know everything or we want to have it all settled. But I read a quote kind of similar to that, John. It was something like evangelical culture took what was like the gospel tries to address unanswerable questions. But evangelical culture sometimes turns that into unquestionable answers. Like we just go like, this is the creeds. This is what it is. And like even this doctrine that we have about how long your hair should be is an unquestionable creed.
Yeah.
You know, like we've made up our minds. And if you don't want to be a part of our whatever our sect is, whatever our denomination is, look, you're free to leave. But this is what we have. And we believe that we figured it out. And these are unquestionable tenets now. And so, yeah, it's kind of you're held in contempt for having questions.
That's very interesting. We talked about that last week a little bit, but everything should not be pulled into the creeds. The creeds are important.
Yeah.
Nicene Creed is probably the most accepted international statement of Christian faith of what we would say, hey, if you are a believer, most Orthodox, if you're going to use that word, believers, they believe this, Nicene Creed. And I think about traditions we grew up in where there are other things listed as, they would call them fundamental truths.
Right.
Maybe. Denominations began creating their own version of that would include a lot, most of it, from the Nicene Creed. But like there was I've struggled.
They put it on the same level, though.
Exactly.
Like Jesus was born of a virgin. Also, this, you know, alcohol consumption is this damnable thing. And so like now you've elevated this weird tenet to the same level as Christ's incarnation.
Right. And that's such a key, like I remember, and I don't mind talking about this because it's fine, but you know, the Pentecostal denomination that you and I were both a part of, and we were both actually ordained in at one point. You know, there was 16 fundamental truths, and one of those was about the Holy Spirit in particular, was a greater point of emphasis.
Right.
Functionally. They could say it wasn't, but it was, because they would call it, this is our distinctive. That was their thing. This is what makes us different than the Baptists or whatever. And like, I came to a point as a history teacher and a guy on a journey here where it was like, that was written in 1914.
Mm-hmm.
The Nicene Creed was written in the fourth century.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, and they didn't include one of those.
Right. So basically you're saying these poor lost souls for those 1500 years had no clue. And thank God we came along in 1914 and figured it out and got it right.
It really was a lot of that. And I love those guys. And I'm grateful for my heritage and all those things. But I think again, and Laura and I always laugh, it all comes back to Henry Ford for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, I watched The Food That Built America last night. Did you know that Henry Ford is responsible for charcoal briquettes?
Of course.
Ford,
no, I didn't know
Ford
that.
Used
no
to,
one knows that.
That he, they had, were invented by someone else because that's a man.
Tell me he
invention.
Didn't have charcoal briquettes like heating a car or something.
Well, no, but all but there was a lot of wood.
People
on the
were just
cars.
Getting set on fire and dying of carbon monoxide poisoning.
The Model T's had a lot of wood.
Yeah.
You know, and so the sawdust shavings, and he tried to figure out with Mr. Kingsford, who he worked with.
Right.
What could we do with all this? And nobody was cooking outside back then. Like, it wasn't a thing to grill in the backyard. There was no such thing as a backyard, you know, back then. And so basically, you see these bags. They were selling them at Ford dealerships.
Yeah.
They started selling little grills.
Huh.
Like these little grills with these bags of Ford charcoal
and it
briquettes.
Was the shavings.
It was them taking the, they would.
From the
they would,
manufacturing of the cars.
Because, charcoal is already burnt wood that's then compacted. And then when you reburn it, it creates that, that different. Anyway, but like Henry Ford, this idea that we can put everything on an assembly line, we can make it all the same. I think there's a pride to it in modern post-industrial revolution culture, Western culture in particular, that says in 1914, sure, let's redefine.
Right.
Or let's add one and we're good with this. I'm not saying that the early church got everything right.
Yeah.
And I understand that we're supposed to, we talked about, I think, redemptive movement before in the hermeneutical world. But like, so yes, we keep moving and yet now we see, yes, hey, we don't need slavery today, that we see some of those in biblical times. Different in context and historical, but there's a movement forward of what the gospel does that we can live out maybe even better today because the Bible's culture is not necessarily the utopian society that we act like it is. That's where God encountered people where they were.
Right. Descriptive, not prescriptive.
Right. And so he expects us to keep growing because he's not going to until we're with him
and
perfect all things. But like this idea though of going, man, if guys who are three or four generations removed from the apostles,
mm-hmm.
like if they didn't have one of those in the 16 fundamental truths, I struggle with that now. Hey, you know, there's a moment in time to go, we should beware when we think that modern ways of seeing the world, there might be a better expression today. I'm not saying that. But when we completely abandon 2,000 years worth of church culture or history in favor of modernism or presentism is the term where you evaluate through our current eyes and you begin to believe that what's happening today, we're smarter than Socrates.
Yeah.
It's like we have such little respect, I think, not only for our elders who are alive today.
Yeah.
I mean, think about our culture is very against old people, but also against people in our past because we assume without technology and iPhones that somehow we have a higher intelligence when truthfully we're probably dumber.
We're not
than
a
were.
Nickel smarter.
No.
We have all the information in the world in our pocket and just not even close. John, it's funny you should bring up history.
You know, I thought it was too.
Because it's a special day because it's my birthday.
It is.
But it's also time to take a look back at this week in history. It's a segment we like to call Talk About Then. Right, John. I wanted to bring this up because I know we want to launch a new segment very soon. John and I have been talking about this, but we love like the history of colloquialisms and history of like words, the etymology, if you will, which is also the study of insects.
And I think you will.
No, that's entomology. I know. Just being stupid here. But I saw this yesterday and made me laugh or made me, I think you would think it was interesting. It was an article about the history of words that we use every day that are actually people's last names. And one of them was boycott. Did you know boycott comes from somebody's last name?
No.
In 1880, the word was invented to describe what was happened happening to one Charles Cunningham Boycott because of the way he treated the farmers who rented land from him. The people in his town refused to have anything to do with him.
Huh.
So that was the
first. I wanted his name to be like Jedediah or something.
Jedediah Boycott.
Oh, Jedediah Boycott.
It was a Charles Cunningham Boycott.
Cunningham's, that's,
yeah.
Oh, Cunningham Boycott. I'm not going to call him Charles.
They let their dollars do the talking and said, like, we're done with you.
Interesting.
And he probably kicked them all out of his
right
rental houses, but
yeah,
I don't know if it worked. He may
have
still.
We don't know if the first boycott worked.
We don't know if it actually was successful, but.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week in history, let's move on. Hold on, let me find it. I got it pulled up over here. Don't you leave me. Okay. Studebaker, talk about cars. Studebaker and Packard merged, John, this week in 1954, the last two independent U.S. automakers. I did not know that. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Independent automakers, U.S. automakers, agreed to combine forces, which, as we know, they went on. Didn't go so well. They formed the Studebaker Corporation in 1962.
They probably should have kept it as it was.
The hollow nickel spy case, John,
was
found hidden in 1953 this week. Microfilm from a Soviet spy is found in a hollow nickel by a newspaper delivery boy. That's a very old sentence. Newspaper delivery boy, nickel.
Don't take any hollow nickels.
And Soviet spy. Although we wouldn't have Soviet spies. We'd have Russian spies now, but we wouldn't have Soviet spies. The coin felt funny to the newspaper boy, so he dropped the nickel on the ground and it fell apart, revealing a tiny microfilm. He had been given the nickel earlier as change. Years later, it was determined that the nickel belonged to Soviet spy Rudolf Ebel, who was exchanged for captured U.S. U-2 pilot Gary Powers.
Wow.
So I don't, and they didn't, they've, I don't, I've not found out what the microfilm had on it. Hopefully it wasn't like really important secrets, U.S. secrets or whatever, but yeah. So yeah, so don't take any hollow nickels.
Yeah.
I used to, you ever hear the old phrase, don't take any wooden nickels?
Yeah.
I don't know. John, this week, 1918, the Great Circus train wreck. A train engineer fell asleep and crashed into the rear of a stopped circus train, killing 86 circus personnel in Indiana. The engineer had slept little, if at all, in the preceding 24 hours. See what happens? Mm. This is just like your car story.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why you never became a train conductor. That combined with several heavy meals,
wow,
and kidney pills are thought to have caused him to fall asleep at the controls. He missed at least two automatic signals and warnings posted by a brakeman before plowing into the back of a 26-car circus train, which had made an emergency stop to check a hot box. The engineer and his fireman were criminally charged, but the jury found itself deadlocked and a mistrial was declared. Prosecutors declined to retry the case and charges were dropped. So nobody faced any recompense for this.
I feel like that there should have been more than one engineer.
Maybe. And, you know, I don't know. It's like one of those things of like, it's obvious negligence. Obviously, he didn't set out to kill people. But when you have somebody behind the wheel, there's a lot of responsibility there. You shouldn't be. I've had a lot of heavy meals. I think I've dodged a bullet. And between that and my kidney pills.
I can tell you something. When I used to drive the bus with the kids, I'd feel the weight.
You'd feel
it. I'd feel it behind. I'd pray a lot.
And then, of course, the kids would troll you every now and again. I remember the time that didn't Dane text you, like you left me at the gas station?
Yeah.
And you start freaking out. You're an hour down the road.
We were like an hour. And he was like, you left me in,
You left me in Manchester.
And it was so like something that would really happen.
And your heart just sinks. Because, it's so many kids. It's like Home Alone.
And I'm going.
You just go, where's Kevin?
And I'm mad at Dane because I'm like, why did you wait an hour?
Right.
What were you doing? Were you that distracted? You're just roaming around a gas station? And it was very possible.
Yeah.
All that's very possible.
Right.
Dane, I hope you're listening. It's very possible that you're being
And then he goes, did he come up to you or did he text you back?
I think
because he's in the bus when he sent the text.
Went running back at the bus
and
found him.
He's hiding.
Yeah, or something. It was like, you little.
Yeah.
Wow.
These kids are no good. That's what we're getting at. You know, he's a trusted staff member of this church, we like to think. All right, John, finally, this week, 1633, do you want to take a guess?
Puritans?
Galileo was prosecuted for teaching the earth revolved around the sun.
Wow.
I think we've shared this a little bit before, and I think there's a spiritual element to this because it's kind of like we talked about individualism versus collectivism before, but Galileo was literally just teaching against the idea that the earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around us.
Yeah.
He had the gall to say, no, from what I've seen, this, and they're like, he's a witch. They get so mad. It's one of those things. That's when you really see somebody has grown up in real life. It's when they start to realize the earth does not revolve around them, you know? Anyway,
it does make one wonder. I would like to go read up on how they tied the earth being the center of the universe to their theology.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know that.
Because I believe that he was excommunicated.
It says, I'll read the story. The astronomer Galileo Galilei, which is one of those double names.
Yeah.
Kind of. Like a very uncreative mother. You know, why not just Bob Galilei? Anyway, he was sentenced to prison by the Roman Inquisition, so it was definitely a religious. For teaching that the earth revolves around the sun, heliocentrism. In 1615, the Roman Inquisition had determined that heliocentrism contradicted the Holy Scripture, citing biblical passages such as Psalm, and he has a bunch of them, "The world is firmly established, it cannot be moved," Ecclesiastes 1:5, "and the sun rises and sets and returns to its place." So they're taking these and extrapolating, you know, physical movement and scientific movement from these kind of abstract concepts.
Right, from a poetry book.
Right.
Right.
Galileo's dialogue concerning the two chief world systems.
But to be clear, yeah. Psalms is a songbook or near in the poetry. I didn't mean the whole Bible's a poetry book.
Right. Supported heliocentrism, and he appeared to attack. Wait, so Galileo's dialogue, by their way of thinking, appeared to attack Pope Urban VIII. So for this indiscretion, Pope Urban had him brought before the Roman Inquisition under threat of torture. Galileo recanted, did not know this. He was sentenced to house arrest for life, and publication of any of his works was forbidden.
Wow.
As late as not. So they basically canceled him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the original cancel.
Wow.
Because he was just, you're under house arrest, none of your works, you can't make money from anything, and basically you're being discredited. As late as 1990, the church still showed support for Galileo's prosecution as evidenced in a speech by Cardinal Ratzinger, who later became Pope Benedict the 16th, in which he stated, the Roman Catholic Church, verdict against Galileo was rational and just, and the revision of this verdict can be justified only on the grounds of what is politically opportune. However, in 1992, 2 years later, the Catholic Church admitted they were wrong in this decision.
Wow.
So can you imagine hanging on to, that's the thing too about, you know, people talk about religion being closed-minded, and I think that's not necessarily true, because I feel like what you believe about God is the most important question to ask, so we have to be seekers. But when you see something like this where somebody hangs on until 1990,
yeah,
you know, it's like, all right, dude. You know,
well, and what I read in it too is in the original, you know, that there is this Pope Urban, like there has to be an attack against someone's power.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you see power, I think back to your Christian being used as a marketing term, or, you know, or as an adjective. Like anytime you see something rubbing up against someone's power,
right,
structure. And that there's a religious defense for the sake of power, like not biblical authority. I understand there's a time and place to have that conversation, but biblical authority then again gets brought under that umbrella.
Right.
Any sort of talk about one's authority or power comes under, you know, a place of basically heresy to someone else. But that's very interesting to me.
Yeah, that they hung on to it. And then, of course, 2 years later, I don't know what the occasion was, because was he still Pope? Was Pope Benedict still the Pope then? And they were like, look, we got to come off this. Like, you made this statement, but we as a church now have to move away from this. Or was he not Pope anymore? I don't know enough about Catholic, the history of the popes.
Maybe it was like Jedediah Boycott.
Yeah.
You know, like his followers.
Right.
They're like, you know what? We're done with this church. Gosh, very effective.
Guys, we're hoping that you don't boycott this show.
Please.
And full-on cancel us, because I feel like I'm already under house arrest being stuck here with John for an hour. And all my works won't be seen by anybody. There's a good chance of that anyway.
But if you wanted to see Johnny's works, you should try
JohnnyW.com.
That's JohnnyE.
W. If you want to see John's works, go to JohnDriver.com. Where you can see all the newest books. John's got some new projects in the works.
Ugh.
Exciting things. The written word is his playland.
Oh, my goodness.
The English language is like a palette that he, not like a palette like a painter would have, like a stack of pillows on the floor that you make. You know,
when
you make,
say more like,
you know, when you make a pallet when you go to, or like a wooden thing that you stack sacks of concrete on.
The pillows are good because you can fall asleep in any of my books.
I wonder if that's a cultural thing when you say make a pallet on the floor, if they say that everywhere.
That's certainly growing up.
It's a Southern thing,
right? Come over, we'll make a pallet.
I need to ask our Northern audience. Did you guys ever say make a pallet on the floor?
If we said that, did you think your mom's going to stick you on a piece of wood?
Right.
Right.
And then put you in the overhead. Bring out a forklift.
That's right.
But yeah, we make a pallet on the floor. That's it. You make a little fort down there. It's fun.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But yes, you can check out also past episodes. We've already talked about that. And if you'd like to listen to the podcast without any ads, you can just become a Patreon subscriber.
Love our patrons.
At any level. So just go to our website, talkaboutthatpodcast.com, and just click in the upper right, and that's how you get ad-free content sent to you by just becoming a part of the support team, Johnny.
Just listen, it's just ones and zeros we're moving around. What is money?
What is it really?
It's a construct.
If it's a construct, you should have no problem letting go of it into Patreon.
I feel like house payments are a construct, and please don't make me miss one. Thank you, patrons.
Yeah, we do appreciate our patrons. Thank you for listening. And thanks. Mm-hmm. Hey, send us some more reviews. If you have any questions or topics, things you'd like for us to discuss, you can send them over. You can actually just email me directly if you want to, john@johndriver.com.
Look at you giving out your real email.
#JohnDriver. I always feel weird when I say it, john@johndriver.com. And yours is johnny@johnny.com. But it doesn't have your real last name. Mine feels very pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what could be more pretentious than coming up, just calling yourself by a letter.
Yeah.
That's very...
It's like, they'll get it.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like Cher. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Yeah. You're Sting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Johnny W. Jeez, killing me.
So, I'm sorry.
Happy freaking birthday. I'm just kidding.
Thank you.
I would like to celebrate Johnny today, though. Hey, you're a good friend, a good guy, and appreciate you.
That was a nice save.
How old are you?
I'm not going to say. I don't like it. We just got through talking about how the people disrespect people the older they get, and now you're going to play into that by making me like say my age. People are like, oh well, he's put out to pasture.
Well, I can't make my dad joke that I make the day of everyone's birthday if you don't tell me.
Or you don't look a day over, whatever the other.
Right? Doesn't seems like just yesterday you were, and I say the old age. It's not a day over. It's just like it's my own version of it. Hey guys, send us the stuff you want us to talk about. We really enjoy doing it. We'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
There's nothing in this world that he cannot do if we truly allow his love.
We can do nothing without him. Anything that we do apart from him is not something that's permanent.
All we need is grace. That's everybody. We are all broken people on our way to a place that we believe is waiting on us in heaven.
You can find more of Bridges with Monica Schmelter at lifeaudio.com.
In Christ, we are all one family.
Amen.